Welcome to episode 23 of the Mentoring Developers Podcast.
Welcome to Mentoring Developers, the podcast for new and aspiring software developers, where we discuss your struggles, anxieties, and career choices. And now, here's your host, Arsalan Ahmed.
Hi, everyone. Today we have on our discussion panel Jeff Johnson and Edward Stull. Hi, how are you guys?
Doing great.
Doing great, Arsalan. Thanks for having me.
And I'm really excited about this discussion panel because it's going to be about building a team and doing hiring. And from two different perspectives, this is what we like in this show. From Jeff, who is somebody who is on a upward trajectory, but is still fairly new to the industry, but he has the experience of being a startup CTO and hiring in that context, also being on the other side of being hired several times in the last few years of his career. And we have Edward Stull, who is a user experience expert, but he's been in managerial positions. He has managed teams and he has hired a ton of people. So two different perspectives. This is what this show is all about. So are you guys ready to go?
Absolutely.
Yes. Thank you, Arsalan.
So right off the bat, I just want to ask you your general impressions on, you know, building a team and hiring and building a team. Is that something that you guys enjoy? What do you guys think?
Well, I can maybe jump in. This is Ed. So yeah, I do enjoy hiring it because it really ends up setting probably the success of what your everyday life is going to be. You know, if you have a good team, work can be a real joy. If you have problems with the team, it can be like a bad relationship, you know. So I think the general notion of hiring folks is probably, you know, I mean, it probably sounds a little glad-handed to end up saying, but it's like, it's probably the most important task you can end up doing, especially if you're managing, is just make sure that you're bringing people in, because I often end up telling folks, you know, teams are ecosystems, you know? So it's just, the general notion is you want people to be happy and feel like they're doing good work. But the introduction of new people into that ecosystem can either make it happier or less.
I think I totally agree that it is it really is such a core piece. It's when you're looking at developing a product, I think the team is almost the product in itself. So especially looking at sort of a startup context, the growth from, you know, line zero and person zero to, you know, as those things, as you tack on more team members and as you tack on more libraries, I think it's just such a comfortable, natural progression.
So do you attack this problem of building a team or doing, you know, mass hiring, or you need to grow from here to here? Do you think of that as something you need to think about, plan, have a strategy, or just, you know, just get whoever you can get it?
Yeah, I mean, Arsalan, I mean, I think definitely having a strategy for your hiring is, if it's not necessary, it's certainly helpful, you know, because a lot of times, I mean, generally, you know, people will have like requisition orders at a larger company, you know, to staff folks. Sometimes you just have an acute need. But very much knowing what you're getting into with that hiring, not only is good for you, but it's also just a common courtesy to the person you're hiring, right? Because I think we probably, all three of us, you know, as colleagues, probably seen, you know, somebody get hired that probably was just for a short term, but they thought it was long term, you know, when that's really offensive to bringing in a new person, or vice versa, you know. So knowing what you're getting into, I think, is definitely, you know, good practice.
Yeah, I think that in my experience, a lot of companies, they end up doing is they just go in there and they say, we have the budget for two more people, so we need to hire two warm bodies. And what that mm-hmm. means now is we need to go out there and push the resume out to your recruitment companies, or maybe not the resume, put the job qualifications, job description out to job sites, recruiters, whatever, and then we'll get back a bunch of resumes and we will interview them and just pick the two people that will take the job or the two people that somebody likes. Kind of, it's like, you know, just hire two people. That's mm-hmm. a strategy, because, okay, you need two developers. So that's another thing, because the industry likes to use the term air quotes, resources, because they want resources, because because you know, as you know, developers are interchangeable. So you can you lost two, you put two in, you're come out even. What do you think, Jeff?
I think that I do agree that that's a big part of the perception in these bigger in a bigger established environment where you're working with these business constraints that say this is our budget. We of course want our team to be as good as we can, so we want to make sure it's filled and we want to make sure it's got the right people on it. But I think that in that sort of environment, if your manager, I think it's kind of in their wheelhouse, or a really good manager in their wheelhouse, even to look at you beyond a resource and say, okay, here's where your career looks here, and here's kind of the growth opportunity that you can have here. And of course, there's quite a bit you have to do on your own for that too. But I think that it's possible to define a really good trajectory for a person, even if on paper they're a resource. I think there's
it's a good thought. Yeah. I mean, I just maybe the second what you were saying, Jeff. I mean, it's like I often end up using the word trajectory too a lot of times when I'm doing hiring, because especially, you know, if you're hiring somebody who's young, you know, or like first couple, you know, jobs that they've ever ended up having, like especially as a manager, I'm not trying to be flip, but it's like you can really screw up their career, you know, effectively. Mm-hmm. Is that there has to be a ton of diligence applied, especially hiring younger folks, because their perception, you know, of basically work and working with people that, you know, I never like to use the term boss, but it's like, you know, the archetypal boss, you know, that type of thing really ends up affecting, you know, their perception of their craft, you know, even sometimes. So that trajectory argument you were just making, I think is really important, because ultimately it's the person's responsibility, but you contribute to that as a manager, it can be really huge for folks.
Yeah. And I think that I absolutely, and it is a really good point that it can go wrong. So I think it's really a good company's responsibility to say, okay, we're going to fill this role. We should know how we're going to develop this. I mean, we should know where this is going to go. And I think that ties perfectly into, you really ought to have a plan. You know, you really ought to have a hiring plan beyond, okay, two bodies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I hope that people were able to detect my sarcasm in my last expression, because I think that the idea of using the word resources, it works, because when you are building an invoice, then you're buying things, and you know it's very easy to say I want two developers, one designer. It's like a recipe, right? I want to build this application, so that recipe includes ingredients. The ingredients are two developers, one designer, one tester, one business analyst, put all together and stir and then cook on high flame until you have an app. That, you know, that kind of mentality, it's very simplistic and it's completely unrealistic, but I understand where they're coming from, because a lot of these people that make those decisions, they know the money, they know the constraints that money has, or the financial constraints they have, but they don't really know how to build apps, because it's like building a painting. If you you have a masterpiece, or you want to have a really nice, a good quality painting, that will people will appreciate 1,000 years from now. So can you you don't have a Picasso, so can you get 100 college grads, fresh college art graduates, stick them in a room, and 10 years later you have a Picasso masterpiece? That's kind of a deal. You can't throw money and people at a problem and expect that it'll automatically solve itself, because applications software, unfortunately, it's a bit of an art form, and there is some science to it, there's some engineering to it. But this is another thing that people like to use the word engineer when they hire developers. And it's kind of disingenuous, honestly, because we're not really engineers. Engineering is a very disciplined, you know, set of activities that you do to engineer a product. It's well known, it's well understood, and kind of doesn't change as often. But a developer has to use something that you can't really point to. It's like something abstract inside of you that makes you a great developer, but it's not the same thing as an engineer. It's not but the problem is it's hard to define people because so if you say a programmer or a coder, you need two coders, programmers, that it kind of implies that they're stupid. They're like, these are people who just know how to write in that particular language. You just have to tell them what needs to be done and how, and they'll just do it for you. I think that's the idea. That's why they have, okay, now we need an architect who will tell this developer what to do and why and how. He knows how, and he knows the why, and he knows the how. He just needs to tell this code monkey how to do it, and then he'll do it. And that's, I think I've seen this personally, honestly, where you feel like, as a team, you feel like developers are interchangeable because they're not really adding anything valuable to the product. They're just doing the mindless work. Jeff, you wanted to say something?
I definitely see where you're coming from, where you have that. You get teams that end up being these sort of just sort of spec execution is sort of the role of the programmer. And those are teams where, and this is maybe personal for me, but where it's not area you get to use that sort of creativeness that I think a lot of software developers got into software to do. And it's not going to be, while you'll get that button added to that task, you know, to that view on time potentially, you're not going to get the best out of that team either. And I don't think you'll see that kind of growth. So it's when you know, kind of a big requirement for that role is identifying how to mix the art and the engineering together, and identifying folks who have that kind of passion to pursue that. And that's why I think it is just so hard to really assess a software engineer by saying, okay, can you just do this test for me? You know, can you write this little widget and I can give you a pass fail grade? I mean, it's really not that simple. It's so much more subtle, and there's so many more skills that come into a productive team member's wheelhouse. You know, it's collaboration. There's so much more to it than that. So it's a hard thing to do. That's what it comes down to. It is an incredibly hard thing to do.
Yeah, and it is hard to figure out how to create a team, because you don't exactly know. You can't really have a bullet list, which, you know, if you go to a job site and they will have job ads and they will have a bullet list. Yeah, technology, 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 this. And it's completely unrealistic, but we don't really have any other way. I guess we, as an industry, we don't know how to filter people, how to find the right person. You don't really know. You can't point it, because the nebulous question, or the idea of qualification, we don't know. If let's say that you're building a product, you're building a, what kind of, as a CTO, when you were CTO of a startup, what was your product about?
It was a web application, and it actually still is. A web application that does scheduling and payment processing for leisure class studios, so like dance and yoga. It's ClassBug, if any of you out there are looking to start a yoga studio.
I hope you're still a shareholder. I hope you still get a cut of it.
Absolutely. I'm still committing code.
Oh wow.
Just not to the degree of the 24 hours that the startup world can be sometimes, and longing sometimes. But that was our area. We all web based, but there's no way we could put out a list and say, okay, you need to know Ruby on Rails and you need to know yoga. No, you know, it wasn't that easy.
So my question to you, Jeff, is this. Now I just wanted to have an example application. So I have this application, it's e-commerce, it's web-based, it has these, what technologies you use is not that important in the long run, but it's relevant to this particular task. Now you need to hire people, or you need to grow a team. Now you need to, instead of having two developers, you may need five developers. You think you need five developers, because you think that you need to grow, you know, you need to grow the application twice as much. So then another person might think that, okay, well, then you need to grow the team twice as big. That may or may not be the case, but a lot of people might think like that. The question is, now you need to hire more people because you have more work that you can handle. How do you list the qualifications? How do you come up with the list? And how do you communicate the list of what those new people need to have? What are those qualifications? What comes to your mind, Jeff?
That's a great question. I will say, for me, it's easy to start with the tech stack. You know, that's an easy spot. But to me, the things that jump out are the things that the qualifications that I look for that to me would make a great team working experience, and that is emphasis on. These are things I'm going to say them, but they're things that I often read in a job post and you're like, okay. They seem like fluff in a lot of cases, but truthfully, they really are core components and things that you do want to assess as you're sort of meeting someone. But things like the ability to schedule and manage their own work, the ability to sort of manage a project from either side of it. You look for that, the knowledge of just understanding a bigger system as a whole, and just communication as well is a critical point. And that's not just being able to read and write well, it's being able to come to you with a problem and being able to come ahead of when that problem is a bigger issue. A lot of times in job postings, see a lot of that teased out into, you know, like great team spirit, effective communicator. I go back and forth whether I think that's, you know, almost corny to have and list, but it's like, yeah, those are the things you're looking for. You know, those are really something that goes beyond like, I'm a great engineer. Those are things that go, I'm going to make a great team.
The question is, how do you communicate that? So one way of doing that is to just list it in a job description. But like you said, when people look at that job description, they completely ignore that because it's, first of all, it's hard to judge. And if you really want a job, you can say, sure. You know, all these questions, I can say, yes, I'm a great team person. Yeah, I'm a great communicator. You know, so the question is, how do you communicate that so that you attract the attention of the right people, right? Because you can obviously put a job ad out there and you can try to, list it. And for example, I can do it two ways. I can say, let me just say that. Let me just list it out. Mm-hmm. Or I can add some copy, some text to the job description that attracts those people. Because, you know, let's say that I want somebody who can communicate really well, especially the written communication part. So I write the job description in really good copy. So they look at it, they're attracted by it. They're like, wow, I want to talk to the person who wrote that copy. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, absolutely.
That's another way of doing it. That's a little bit more thoughtful. That's kind of my way of doing it. But of course, my way of doing things are always harder. So what do you think, Ed?
Yeah, well, this is a great point. I mean, I think sometimes, I mean, this is a kind of a bit of a non-answer, so I'll just tell you that in advance. But it's just that a job description in itself, as you mentioned, it's like it's extremely difficult to make that, you know, the primary, you know, conduit to getting a good person onto your team. You know, it's because in some ways, I often end up talking to folks about this, where it's like people talk about hiring for roles, but you're always hiring a human being, you know, so it's a person. So the notion of what you can really describe on paper in terms of saying like, well, this is the type of human we want to show up, you almost can't do that, you know, in some ways, whereas it's like you have to have a bit of a, you know, an exposure, you know, person, you know, out of this type of thing, like either a trade group or people just know the company, they know people of people, you know, all that, where if you're solely relying on the job description, and I know that's not the argument you're making, but to make a job description be that definitive and that, you know, evocative of the type of person you want to hire, that may be a somewhat impossible task. I mean, you did bring up, I think, one good point, or at least I inferred it, is that, you know, writing it well, you know, and grammatical, you know, and all that type of stuff does begin to start connoting certain virtues and values of your company. But you know, say, for instance, with Jeff, like at Microsoft and within his individual team and being in Seattle, it's just like, I'm not surprised if he doesn't, you know, have a couple people on deck that he'd be like, oh, you know, this would be a great person, you know, that I possibly met at some other context. It'd be wonderful to have on my team, you know. Also, as well as you, Arsalan, with your experiences, is that you kind of always have an aspect of like kind of getting the band back together, you know, sometimes when you know some good folks. And often, like I know when I've done hiring, is that it's not always determinative, but one of the first things I do is I ask the people that I know and care about and respect, you know, who they have on deck, and then possibility, you know, you can begin to start kind of working that grapevine a little bit.
Yeah, that's a good point. So you need to communicate. So the here's the thing. You have a need for a person. That's very hard to pinpoint what that person is, but you have an idea of what you need, what type of person you need in your team. And you know that person is out there. But that person, because he's valuable or she is valuable, mm-hmm. and they bring a lot to the table, they're also in demand. So they're not really looking for you. You need to make them aware that you exist. And you are a great place for them. That's the communication gap that we have. So one way of doing that would be to put job ads, but those people may not be looking at job ads because they're well paid and they're probably doing well. So then the other approach that you mentioned was to reach them through their colleagues, which is obviously the preferred method for a lot of companies, which is great. So you need to now reach the people that they know and convey this message in a way that's not salesy, right? Where you want to show them you are a fantastic place to work for somebody exactly like them. And you mm-hmm. know their friends, and their friends will mention it, hopefully. And then you'll have a handful of candidates, not going to have a lot. And then it's your job now to impress upon them that you are the right place. So it's actually it's a reversed process. Where you need to convince them that they should pick you instead of the other way around. But when somebody applies to your job, then they're trying to convince you that they're good. And generally, that puts you in a position of strength. But in this other way, where you get referrals, it puts them in the position of strength. Mm-hmm. And that means if that happened, then you can say safely that, generally speaking, the quality of the candidates you're going to get are going to be way higher. But then there's the onus is definitely on the hiring company to present themselves in a certain way. So that was interesting. Now, what qualities will you look for, Ed? You're trying to find this ideal person for your team. Let's pick an mm-hmm. example from your past. You can go back as far back as you want and pick an example of a team that you were a part of and you wanted to increase, you know, you want to hire people or you wanted to build a bigger team or evolve the team. And then what process did you follow? Mm-hmm. What qualities were you looking for? And what are your, you know, let's say that from your experience, what worked and what didn't work?
No, it's a good question. A pretty broad one too. I think, you know, it's hard to say that I have like an overriding philosophy. I've kind of joked with folks is that when I've done hiring is that it's just two qualities. Is that can they do the work and are they a psychopath? You know, and frankly, but that's joking, but, you know, that's not that much different than the way people do hiring, you know. So it's just the notion of saying, like, you know, if you do have these kind of more role specific things, you know, you need as Jeff had referred to, like a particular technology stack, you know, you need somebody that, you know, will often be presenting possibly in front of other team members. So you need to know, like, hey, are they comfortable, you know, being able to present or write, you know, different things along that lines. But that whole notion that, you know, I often try to be in, trust me, it is easier for me to preach about this than actually practice it. But just to recognize that there is a deluge of cognitive biases people have when they hire, you know, and to be aware of that, where it's like the thing that I often kind of just repeat as a mantra to myself is you hire for what you need, not what you want. You know, so it's just that the notion is that the what you want can quickly be kind of glossed over based on, you know, the personality, you know, of somebody in particular. And so it's just something where it's like, you know, if you can kind of keep that quick thing where you begin to start saying like, okay, you know, is this person actually be able to fulfill at least the need kind of portion? So much of the want thing is to kind of be humble enough as to recognize that, you know, this sounds a little maybe hippie-ish, but it's like, we're all just human beings. So my opinion of some stranger walking in and, you know, having to show their stuff and they're obviously their careers on their line and they're thinking about their jobs and possibly relocating and all, like just a whole smattering of different things. That's not the best way to meet, you know, some other strange person. You know, it's just like if we were meeting over a beer or something like that, they'd be a totally different person, you know, probably. But having to walk in, you know, and having to interview and stuff like that, I've never really thought is really the best example of the other person you're talking to is that, you know, and again, maybe just kind of going back to that original point is to saying like, if you kind of focus on what you need, a lot of the what you want kind of stuff, you don't get necessarily glossed over by essentially dealing with somebody who just doesn't interview well or somebody who interviews really, really great, but maybe they don't actually have what you need. So hopefully that answers your question, but it's just that it's a difficult process and could be a bit of a mind exercise when you do end up doing that hiring, because there's just a ton of things you have to kind of, you know, focus on and a ton of things you have to focus not on.
It's an interesting description. It's a difficult process and it's hard to put a finger on it, but I wonder, in both of you guys, I would like you to answer this question that just came to me. What if you couldn't find your ideal person? What if you are expanding your team and you come to a point where you realize, well, we haven't really found the person that we're looking for, but we still need to do the work. Mm-hmm. So do you hire, you know, just the next best person or anybody else, or do you just wait for that person?
That is a good question. I think that there's I liked what Ed had mentioned about the focusing on the need aspects and kind of letting some things fill in. I think that you can kind of establish with a teammate, you can kind of establish, okay, these are the musts. The musts. There's it's a non-starter if they're not a developer, right? That's a non-starter to hire a developer. It's a non-starter if they're a psychopath. And once you get sort of past that, you can kind of prioritize, I think, that list. The musts need to be in the bucket of this will be toxic for the team. This is going to take away from everyone else's experience if we're hiring this. That bucket is clearly okay. We're staying out of that one. But I think there's always the need to make the balance of, yeah, we got to get this done. We need some folks on board. So if you spend so much time trying to find your dream candidate through interviewing and the fact that technical interviews are kind of flawed to begin with, you may just really end up going in circles and sort of wasting your time and maybe finding letting potential hires go by that would have been a great fit had they just given some time and soaked up the culture and things like that. So I think you got to draw the line. That's what I think.
No, it's a great point, Jeff, because I mean and Arslan, to your original question too, is that there is this notion that, I mean, and again, I'm not going to call out any companies specifically because that would be stupid of me to do, but it's like, I think we probably all know of companies that are notorious for like having like a job, you know, description up for like 6 months, you know, and it's either because they have some procedural thing that's going on or they really don't have the role and they're just trying to find, you know, folks, you know, trying to attract them. But sometimes it is that thing where somebody's just looking for perfection. And I guess not to be duplicate of my own earlier point, but it's just that it's like you sometimes just can't figure that out in a hiring situation, you know, that perfection, you know, this whole notion of just saying like, you know, does this person seem stable? Do they seem caring, you know, towards other human beings? You know, do they seem, you know, like they're being a jerk to anybody, you know, like all those type of things. Obviously, you can sometimes, you know, expose themselves. But the general notion is I think I just always go back to the thing, like, is this what their role needs? And frankly, I may not, you know, me personally, I may not be the best, you know, determiner, you know, of somebody's personality, is to simply say like, you know, hey, do they have a base level of respect for their other colleagues and who the folks that they work with, and can they do the job? And then often in that case, it sometimes avoids you having to look for that perfection, because that perfection often is just a myth to begin with.
So let me throw another question at you, Ed. So imagine that you're in a scenario where you need to hire two people and you find either people who are really good communicators, really nice people, they're technically kind of not really up to the mark, or there's another type of person who is technically really good, but from a personality point of view, you have serious doubts about their, you know, their skills. And then there's another set of people that are kind of average or below average in both aspects. They're tolerable in both, you know, they seem like, okay, they kind of know the technical parts and they kind of are acceptable from a personality point of view. Now, these three sets of groups, how would you hire people in this case?
Yeah, I mean, I think I may actually literally need to draw a diagram of those three groups. But I think if I, just to reiterate what I think I heard you say, is like if you're finding somebody who's technically stronger, but maybe not as good interpersonal-wise, and then is there somebody interpersonal-wise that's good, but not as good technically? And then there's a third group of people that are just kind of average on both cases. Is that what average, I heard you say?
Yeah, well, yeah, yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, it's easier for me to make it sound like I'm coming from on high and preaching about this stuff. Often it is a bit of that art kind of conversation we said. I would say it's probably the level of severity of the first two cases, right? Like, I mean, there are folks that I've met that are just so technically much stronger than I am. I mean, they're just, it seems as if they were born into the role. And they're going to be so powerful, you know, as a technical force, like on a team, and possibly, you know, being able to serve as just the, you know, the stopgap that fills in all holes, that them not being very good interpersonal wise, you know, or folks that, you know, both you and I and Jeff, we may actually have, you know, friends or folks we know that may have like Asperger's, you know, or something, which, you know, very technically strong, but have very difficult times, you know, with interpersonal things. That doesn't necessarily mean that person isn't going to be great on their team. You know, as long as they're respectful to folks, you know, you don't always need somebody to be the salesman. But then also in the other case, you know, the second role you had talked about is that some folks that if they're really great interpersonal wise and they can kind of become that gel or kind of like the heart of the team, you know, they're just such good people to be around and to make the team feel good. If you believe they have the capability to be able to learn the craft, well, then sometimes they're the best hire, you know. And then I guess in that third case, you'd mentioned that are folks that are just kind of like average on both. You know, it's somewhat of an impossible question to answer, and I'm probably not going to give a very good answer. It's also just that kind of, you know, can you get a glimpse into basically saying, like, do they have a track record, you know, of possibly being able to at least indicate that they have the proclivity that they might be good at least one of those, if not both? But again, sorry, this is repetitive because I feel like I'm giving you another non-answer. But it is just that kind of, you know, art is to say, like, you've got those three folks and on paper, throwing people into a grid just doesn't really speak to somebody's humanity often. And you kind of have to, you know, go a little bit with your gut and try to avoid as much bias as you possibly can. But it definitely could be a head scratcher.
Absolutely. I'm throwing really difficult questions at you. On purpose, because
that's all good.
Because the easy questions we have all of them figured out. This podcast is all about the hard stuff. It's stuff that is hard to pinpoint. It's hard to say, for example, what to look for when you're building a team. That's exactly the point of this. And I want to put you in an uncomfortable place so that you can reach out and give us some nuggets of wisdom. So, Jeff, I'm going to ask you the same question in a little bit different way. So the question is really about what's more valuable to you and how do you see, you know, in your worldview, is it the interpersonal aspects, communication, all that, that's a really valuable part of a team member, and the technical parts are, you can say, well, they're kind of not that hard. It's not rocket science. Anybody can learn that as long as they're willing to. That's one approach. The other approach is, well, you know, the technical parts are really difficult and it's really, really hard to find a master or somebody who's really good at maybe better than yourself. And if you find that person and if that person's a jerk, you deal with it because it's just so hard to find that person. And you just, you know, everybody else has to work around their issues. Those are two separate approaches. I want to see your opinion.
I think it really depends on where the team is at, you know, kind of what stage. When you have a really small team and maybe really early in the product, it's going to be so critical that you have those really strong interpersonal skills and you have those really strong ability to tear hunker down the problem and communicate all the, you know, all the aspects and challenges, because you're just starting out. You know, things are fresh. A misunderstanding in the beginning can really move things off. And also, if you're looking at a startup, which is kind of where I'm thinking of this this answer coming from, you might even be talking to customers too. So I think that in the early stage, everyone's really, really, really working together. As things mature, and I think as go down the line, I think there's a lot more room for sort of the specialties, sort of team members who can really specialize in, you know, certain technology areas or certain aspects of the product. And there's a lot of room for that kind of specialty. I don't think that is as you know, as true in the beginning, when it's really not that big yet. There's really not the, not those niches that can provide a lot of value. It's so young. So I think that the healthy approach is to have, is to, you know, maybe start there, but really have a blend in the end, and not the end, but as time progresses, you should really have a blend.
It's a great point, Jeff.
Well, that's really good. So is it safe to say I have a team of four people that I am managing, and two of them are really good communicators, and two of them have mad technical skills? Is that a good team? Because now we have all of it, but it's kind of like, oh, if I need somebody to write emails or, you know, do a project presentation, I have these two guys. And if I need somebody to write code, I have these two other guys. Mm-hmm. Does that work?
It depends on what kind of work, I think, and it depends on the space. If you have, I think the most important thing is having the right balance of, these are the tasks that this is. I'm starting to doubt this answer because this is, seems so obvious, but it's having the right balance of, this is the work coming in, these are the skills we need to address it, and my team is fit for it. You know, if you have a big inflow of, we need these customer requests, we need to talk to these guys, then it's going to be important that you have that, you know, those two people on that. But let's say it's once in a while, or let's say once in a while, it's just that your team needs to reach out to other teams and come up with some coordination. That's just once in a while. Then just maybe one would be fine. You know, one in that role would be good. So it has to be the right fit, I think, for the space. And depending on the complexities and the size of the environment, that's going to change, I think.
Well, let me give you my opinion on this. I think that it's okay to have people who have really good skills in one part of the whole spectrum, right? We can say somebody who's really good technical skills, but it's a complete disaster when it comes to communication and interpersonal skills, and they have other issues. You know, a lot of smart people are like that, unfortunately, but let's keep it there. So they're good technically. And there's another group of people who have really good interpersonal skills, they have good communication skills, but they're weak on the technical side. I think that both of these people, both these types of people, have a place in a team, as long as they all want to come to this common place where everybody has good communication skills and everybody has good technical skills. So as long as they want to be, like, if I don't know how to talk to people and I rub everybody off the wrong way, but I want to be better, and I'm really good technically, but I really want people to like me, and I really want to communicate, but I just don't know how. And there's another group who really wants to write the best, most efficient code possible, but they're just completely clueless, but they're good in communication, but they really want to learn. They really want to come to this common place where everybody is good in communication and everybody is good technically. Then those are, in my opinion, those are good hires. Then, because over time, everybody's converging towards this common. And it's not acceptable for me, in my worldview, it's not acceptable for somebody to say, I am a quote-unquote rock star developer. That's all I do. And I don't need to do anything else. I do it my way. And if somebody doesn't like me, it's their problem. You know, that person doesn't really have a place in my worldview. But if you're somebody who is just clumsy, that's fine. I can work with clumsy. What do you guys think?
I think that's smart. I mean, if I heard everything correctly, or as long as is it, you know, is the general notion is that, and I think all three of us are really making this kind of argument, is that what is the current context of what you're hiring into, right? So it's just that is, I think if I'm hearing Jeff's perspective, you know, especially from a startup, you know, thing, is you often end up having to have some folks that are very competent generalists that can handle both sides of those equations. You know, when you get a little bit larger, you can end up focusing more on the specialties, you know, of these particular things. Arsalan, I think, if I'm hearing you correctly, you're saying a lot of that kind of that specialty argument, you know, is relevant, you know, in almost any team size, but also especially when it's larger. Yeah, I mean, and so, I mean, essentially, I agree with both of you. I think the only other thing I maybe would add to that is that I also just try to be very cognizant that I'm just not trying to hire myself. Because that happens a lot, you know, especially with inexperienced managers, is they just try to build folks in their own image, you know, and I don't want to hire a bunch of balding dudes in their 40s that have two cats like me, you know, is that I'm not the most, you know, the best hire on every context, you know. Now, that's not to mean that I have something against folks, you know, that have, you know, the same background that I do. But as you've gone through, and I've listened to many of your podcasts, Arsalan, you know, as you run into all sorts of much more serious dynamics, you know, in terms of backgrounds, different, you know, socio classes people come from, different cultural backgrounds, you know, all sorts of different things like that. Is that if you really, I mean, and I think some people make that mistake, is that they just tend to keep on hiring people that are versions of themselves. And not only does that speak on those more serious issues we just talked about, but also in the more softer stuff that you're talking about too, is to say that, you know, I talk a lot and I feel fairly comfortable, you know, doing that. I don't have a deep technical bench. And frankly, if I wasn't paying attention, I'd probably hire people that talk a lot and don't have a very deep technical bench. But that doesn't necessarily mean I'm going to make my team stronger just because I hired somebody like me.
Yeah, diversity is really important. That's another question that I had in mind, because it's a deliberate criteria. Right. It's this criterion of having a diverse team. Now, diversity can be defined in many different ways. We can go into that. But it doesn't happen automatically. It's not just going to happen just because. You have to actively seek diversity. Now, diversity could be diversity in skill levels. Diversity could be diversity in the racial, ethnic, religious makeup of your team. Diversity could be male-female diversity. It could be, you know, like, it could be within the technical realm. It could be some guy, you have a Ruby on Rails app, but you also want to hire somebody who is really mad Postgres skills, or maybe somebody who's completely out of Ruby on Rails. Maybe he's a Django person, just to give a different perspective to the team. That could be another way of looking at it. Diversity can be defined in different ways, but I believe that it doesn't happen unless you seek it. And that's a question that most companies don't want to handle, because we just want to pretend that everything is fine. But if you have a goal, and a lot of big teams, a lot of Silicon Valley companies have this problem where they have no diversity of any kind because of this idea of cultural fit and team fit, and people on the team decide the next person that's going to be on the team. Obviously, we all have our biases. The question from a manager's point of view is, should you think about diversity from the outset and have that as one of your criteria? Or is just something that happens if it happens, and it's not something that should be sort of retrofitted into a culture? Opinions. Oh, you fell asleep.
No, Jeff, I've been talking for a while, so how about you, Jeff?
Sorry. I think it is something you need to look at sort of from the beginning. And it should be something when you think about, when you get that extra resource, you think, well, what area is my team lacking? You know, what perspective don't we have here? And that can be what backgrounds are we missing? Because being able to bring in experience, whether that be, you know, growing up in a different country, or whether that be a functional developer who now we're going to stick into this object-oriented world, that is going to give you, your team, a lot more breadth, of experience. And I think that's going to really, that makes it more productive, you know, knowing, having experience in different just different knowledge areas is going to make a team more productive. And having that background will help you reach more customers, or it'll help you make more effective code, you know, depending on that difference.
That's a good point, Jeff. You know, maybe one thing to add to this too is that I'm not sure if it resonates with the two of you or with other members of your audiences as much, but, you know, I come from the UX side. So about probably a third of everything I do is like through user testing. And one of the kind of fascinating things that can happen with like qualitative user testing, and that's just the notion of, you know, talking to users about why they're doing something, is that you just discover things that you never even expected to ask. Right. You know, so the notion is you can test something, like, say, for instance, if you're doing unit testing or testing code or something, sometimes you're testing very specific questions, and then you have a range of any number of possible answers. But often, like with user testing, is that, and this is why I kind of think sometimes with like diversity in teams, is that I think Arsalan, you were going with this a little bit, but it's an admirable quality to just look for diversity, because frankly, you don't know the answers that are going to come out of that. You know, and it's like me and my, you know, background and things like that. If I was only hiring folks like that, that's not to say that, you know, other individuals are going to have different perspectives than I am. But if I'm hiring somebody from, like I mentioned, like a different socioeconomic class, different national origin, different things like that, they're going to look at issues, you know, in the context of their own backgrounds. And the more diverse groups you can end up having on that, the more possible questions that might, you know, be illuminated that you would never even think of asking, just simply because you just don't have that, you know, that background that that person can bring to the table, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does make sense. And I've had guests on the show before. Some of those episodes have gone live. Some will go in the future. And the common theme has been when you talk to people with, you know, different backgrounds, they could have, a lot of times it's a racially diverse segment, or it could be somebody who is a woman who is struggling to make her mark in the industry. And you hear this common thing where they're not understood. And it's not fair for men to have to understand everything about a woman, how she thinks, because right then we'll become women, right? So what we need to do is to involve different people in our products, product development, especially product development, probably in services as well. So in some cases, we have had software products that are completely insensitive to segments of our society. Mm-hmm. For example, there was a health app that completely didn't cater to women, women's issues, women's health issues. Mm-hmm. Well, men shouldn't be expected to know. So everybody in that team that developed that health app was a man. And it's not fair to say, well, men should know about women's health issues. The right approach would be to hire women. If you're going to build an app that is going to be accessible to the general public, make sure that you have representatives of the quote-unquote general public in your team, right? There was this case where we had these sensors, I guess, for faucets or whatever in a public place where they would not recognize African Americans because of their skin tone. Because they probably never tested it. This is not malicious. This is just ignorant. And I know that it will be harder because of the skin tones. It's harder to just, you know, to just test it on white people and say, oh, well, you know, it works. But it's the difficult thing to do is to have diversity, is to accommodate people, is a hard thing to do, but it's also the right thing to do. And unless we make this determination as a society, we're never going to do it because there is no incentive, right? There are no rules and regulations. This is something inside of us that are telling us that we need to build diversity. So I'm personally really passionate about that, but there are also the other side of the debate where there are people who say, well, we shouldn't have to think about this because we should just be ourselves. Men tell women that because a woman is in their team, they have to now watch themselves. Now they can't say whatever they want because they have a woman, so they can't be manly anymore. And I've heard women tell me that that's what happened to them or to their friends, where people come to them like, we can't be ourselves because of you. For me, that just enrages me, as makes me really upset. But that's prevalent. That's the world we're living in right now.
So, oh, great. And I mean, and that's a really hostile thing, you know, towards any woman that is on a team. And granted, I mean, I have no wise thing really to add to this, but other to say is like, you know, the concept that you mentioned, like, you know, a group of folks saying they feel like they can't be themselves because, you know, there's a woman on their team. Well, you know what? That's their right off the job. You know, if they, you know, as much as I might morally, you know, make a judgment about folks like that, you know, if they're off the clock with their own friends and family, you know, making these types of decisions, I have a personal choice in that. But I, you know, it's one of those things where it makes me feel awkward is to hear people have that view. But in a job case, not only do you have just the moral implications, but you also have the legal implications of having hostile environments, you know, that thing. So if somebody says that they feel like they can't be themselves because they have a woman on the team, they probably shouldn't be working there. You know what I'm saying? It's like, and that sounds maybe a little punitive, but is to say that it's like, you know what, if that person wants to do that type of stuff off the clock, it has nothing to do with their job, you know, that leave them to their druthers. But on the clock and being in a job where you've got a diverse group of people, nobody should feel as if, and granted, I'm not trying to be in a soapbox, but nobody should feel as if they're threatened based on their gender or national origin or sexual preference. And, you know, any of these type of things, is that just something is that's that just shouldn't have place in the workplace.
Yeah, and I think that's a big advantage of starting off with that, with a diverse team in mind, is that you don't have to worry about, okay, well, we need to, you know, toenail in some diversity here. I mean, it doesn't work mm-hmm. that way, because you can have, you establish that culture from the get-go of inclusive and diverse culture. And problems like that, there's just no place for those to develop in the first place.
Agreed.
Yeah, I think the problem happens when there's weak management or no management. There, you know, in our industry, there's this cool trend of just flat structures where everybody is an equal. Well, when everybody is an equal, we have a lot of these people who are right out of college. They have no people skills. They don't know how to interact with people. They don't know how to be politically correct. And being politically correct sometimes is considered a weakness because you're not being genuine. But in a work environment, in a professional environment, there should be a sense of acting in a certain way that's acceptable to society, and also it should be in a way that's pleasing to others, right? You dress up a certain way. Now, this culture, I mean, I understand where they're coming from, because they're the anti-establishment, the anti-corporation sentiment in the developer industry is very strong, where we should be able to wear flip-flops and shorts and, you know, walk in at 11 a.m. and nobody should tell me that this is wrong, right? This is a culture that we're in because we don't want to be the guy with has to wear the suit. We don't want rules, right? We don't want rules and regulations. We want freedom. I understand where they're coming from, but there's the difference between being rebellious and being offensive is very subtle. And these people who are very young, they haven't really learned the life lessons. They don't know. So the job for a manager, a person who owns a company, who runs a company, who runs a team, that's their job, to establish the norms, the rules that make for, you know, a cohesive and a healthy, happy workplace where everybody, like, you're religious conservative, you're Republican, you're a socialist on the other side, you like to wear flip-flops, you like to wear suits, everybody is welcome. The only way that can happen is if we don't offend each other. And the idea that we have complete freedom to say whatever we want, do whatever we want, we're obviously going to offend each other when we do that, right? If I don't like something, maybe somebody's sexual orientation, I don't like it, it's not my place to comment on it, right? I shouldn't do it in private with my cohorts. I shouldn't have a little group here that says, oh, look at that guy, he's such and such. Or I shouldn't go and talk to people in general. This should never happen. When I'm at work, I should have this respect and honor and providing, you know, just genuine. It has to be genuine. And the problem is that obviously people don't have it. They didn't grow up with it. They have this streak of rebellion, which I have too, by the way. I can be pretty rebellious, but I understand where the line between my freedom, the other person's, I guess, freedom to be, is very, very clear, right? And I can think whatever I think, but if I verbalize it, if I say it, even if I, like I said, in my lunchtime and, you know, talk about some colleague like this, then I've crossed a line, in my opinion. But it's in my head, and what we need to do, my personal opinion, and people are free, you know, feel free to disagree with me. Go ahead and let us know. But my feeling is that we should not behave in a way that offends people, even if we believe that we are right. And that's the way I think society should work, but especially in the workplace. This, yeah, so you're talking about not going on your soapbox. I love to do that. Look, this is something that is not going to happen. Diversity and, you know, just a good, helpful culture is not going to happen just because, you know, it's in my head. I feel like I need to say it. I need people to come out and say it. And that's the way it's going to become the norm in our industry. And I think that we're taking these baby steps towards it, but we're going to just keep going.
Yeah, well, Arslan, just kind of second that, you know, as well. I mean, it's just like you stumbled on, you know, not only is it a very important issue, but it's fairly, it's a hot topic and often awkward, you know, for many folks to talk about. But it's just like that general thing that I think, you know, we're all kind of making is to say that there's a class of conduct that everybody will end up judging on their friends and family, you know, kind of thing. The stuff that has nothing to do with work, we know, you know, people that I'm sure have incredibly offensive views, you know, which are just really, really tough things to deal with. You know, all of us, probably all your listeners too, you loads up their Facebook feeds and they see terrible things that people that are like in their network, you know, thinking about, you know, politics and stuff like that. But all these things are a different context when you're at work, you know, and people just should not have to end up dealing with that kind of like, you know, Facebook feed at work, you know, kind of thing, is to say that, you know, like people should be able to do their jobs, feel like they're getting the respect and appreciation from their colleagues. Everybody's just not being awful to each other, you know, but that whole notion, you know, like you're saying, like political correctness and all, is like, you know, being politically correct in a work environment is perfectly appropriate because it's just that, you know, one person's political correctness is another person's, you know, huge offense, you know? So as again, like I try not to, you know, say like I would anybody that's on my team, I try not to legislate the way they lead, you know, they lead their lives. But when they're at work, you know, there's a certain thing, because not only is it just morally objectionable to allow certain things to happen, but also, you know, they're truly legal ramifications too, especially for some companies. If certain behavior ends up happening in an environment, you have to make sure that it's stopped, you know, just simply for the good of the team as well as the good of the company.
Yeah, I think we all agree on these important points, but my point is not that we should fire people who are misbehaving. My fear is that doesn't solve my problem, which is my problem is I want to solve this malaise in the industry. And that person is going to go to another company and that problem continues. They probably have resentment over this. I want to transform this person. I want to make that person understand that that's wrong, that there's a better way, and have that person change. That's my personal goal. I want people to change in. And if you just, you know, it's good to fire people that may give them the message, but my fear is that they may actually give the wrong message and now they're resentful of it.
Yeah, I think look at like it takes a village kind of thing. You can kind of hope if you build a really good culture that, you know, is professional, inclusive, has all this empathy, you kind of hope, okay, if you end up with some folks who are maybe a little misguided or do have those Facebook feed sort of splattering stuff, you hope that maybe the being in that culture, assuming it's not an issue for the office, you hope maybe that starts to shift some of that, you know, and having those discussions with your boss, where your boss says, hey, you know, this is not okay. Here's why. This is what we do here. You know, I think that you can sort of grow, you know, as you grow your career, you can also grow your understanding of what it means to be in a functioning team, and you can shift those a little bit. And maybe that's naive because I don't have as much experience doing it, but I really think that a culture can really positively influence people that way.
Yeah, and you know what I'm thinking about right now? I think that every company, big or small, should have an assigned counselor who understands the values that the company should project and to have in the culture, and actively engage people to make sure that people understand that. I think that a lot of people in these situations, a lot of people who actually are not behaving correctly, they have no idea they're not behaving correctly. And if they knew it, my hope is that they will change, because they don't want to be offensive and they don't want to be insensitive, but they just, you know, they're kind of socially awkward a little bit. So I think the role for an HR person or a completely neutral person, not a boss, not your manager, but a third person who has authority over this matter, should talk to people individually as groups and somehow find a way to convey the message that this is kind of how we roll here. All right, guys, it's been a great discussion, and I really am fortunate that I was able to put together this panel. And before we go, any final thoughts about these topics, Jeff?
Well, I'm really just happy we could cover these sort of really tough, floaty, you know, what does it mean to build a great team? And I really like how we kind of came through a lot of times, and a big focus is on, you know, a candidate who, or a team that really, I think the defining thread there is, like, you want a team member who cares, who wants to be someone who cares about what the company's doing, cares about what the people around him are doing, and cares to have, you know, a diverse product and a diverse team. So I think that's a common thread I felt throughout that. So I'm glad we can circle around that today.
Yeah, you know, again, I just second what Jeff was saying, and also too is the general notion of, you know, how to build a great team is just to all just be cognizant of the fact that you know, whoever you do decide to bring onto a team, is that you're going to probably spend more time with that person than their own family will. You know, so the general notion is that, you know, you want to make sure that not only are you helping, you know, this person succeed, and, you know, as we talked about earlier, setting trajectories and different things like that, but just also the fact is that you know, how can you, you know, effectively hire for a human being other than hiring for a role? And that's what it's often becomes crucial. And like good teams I've been in, you know, a good team can make a bad company tolerable, and a good team can make a good company really wonderful. So the ideal is that just everybody that, you know, including three of you and or three of us, you know, and anybody else that's listening to you, it's just to wish you luck on this, because hiring and building a really good team is one of the most difficult tasks, but it's really fantastic when it does work out well.
That's true. And hiring is hard, and having diversity is hard. Finding people that fit in the team, have the right qualities, qualifications, that's a difficult, difficult task. But if we have the right intentions, we make the right moves, hopefully we'll get better and better at hiring people. And hopefully we are inspiring a lot of new developers and a lot of aspiring developers to come on board and join our band of people who want to be great developers, want to change the culture around development. And hopefully then we'll have, you know, we won't have any trouble finding great people, because, you know, the new people are just going to be so much better than the old guard. And if you're listening to this show and you want to participate in this discussion, you want to have your opinion in a future episode, send us an email at us@mentoringdevelopers.com, us@mentoringdevelopers.com. Or you can write your comment on the post, send us tweets @mentoringdevs, and just, you know, get in touch and let us know what you think, and we will try to include your opinion on a future episode. Thank you, guys.
Thank you, Arslan.
Thank you.
For show notes and transcripts, visit us at mentoringdevelopers.com.